Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Nerd Talk. Today, we finally have some stuff to talk about. We're going to be talking about Dune 2, because we just saw that the other night. And we talked about Shogun, the new FX show that everyone's talking about and we watched, and it's really good. Before we get into that, we've got a couple things to talk about. Literally right as I was getting ready to record this, I saw that they tweeted the casting for Perry White in James Gunn's Superman movie. It's going to be Wendell Pierce. Wendell Pierce is the guy from the Jack Ryan Amazon show. So they're making Perry White. Guy. They're making Perry White black again. So I figured they were gonna do this because I saw a lot of people complaining that so far all the casting had been comic accurate. They've been casting people that look like the characters, and people don't like that. And I had seen some people complaining like, why is everyone white? It's like, because the characters are white in the comics, dumbass. And so this is their way of James Gunn being like, please don't kill me. I'm diversity. Instead of having a black character in it that's actually black in the comics, we'll just change Perry White again. It's like, whatever. But yeah, it's to be expected. I've only ever seen him in Jack Ryan. I don't think I've really seen him much else. He's fine. I mean, I don't know. It's whatever. I'm not really hyped about him being cast as Perry White. I think he'll do fine. But it is what it is. We got the Superman logo actually officially revealed, kind of, because it's like super zoomed in with snow on it, because Superman's birthday just happened. They're actually filming right now. It's like it looks very similar to the Man of Steel, actually, because a lot of people were saying it was going to be because they showed on the cue cards or whatever when they were doing the script meeting that it was going to be like Kingdom Come, and I'm not the biggest fan of the Kingdom Come logo, so I was hoping it wasn't be that. And then we got the actual logo, and it looks a lot like the Man of Steel logo.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
Not as the S doesn't curve as much at the end. I almost think it's, I don't know, too, like the fat part of the S is too big. Like the middle part, I feel like it's too big. But who knows? We'll see how it looks when we actually see it.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to judge with this super zoomed in picture.
It's just huge. Yeah, it's like the middle part of the S is huge.
Yeah. But it looks fine from what I can see. But yeah, I like the colors. That was like the only complaint I had about the Man of Steel crest was the yellow. The yellow was not yellow enough to where here it's like very clear. So I like that. I like the colors. But yeah, the S itself is like okay. I could have done better with the S itself, but looks fine. I like the colors at least. I think the final piece of news we have to go over is Thomas Hayden Church, who played Sandman in Spider-Man 3, says that he thinks that Raimi's going to make a fourth Spider-Man movie. And he says he'd love to be in it. Because they're talking about how they're like, oh, Secret Wars and all these other stuff. Like, Sandman could come back. But he's like, nah. He's like, I think Sam Raimi's going to make him and Toby are going to make that fourth Spider-Man movie. He's like, that's where I want to be. And I honestly could see it happening because Sony is down to make literally anything. Just, they have to actually trust Sam Raimi this time and not do something stupid. Because we just saw how Madam Web was. Well, I
didn't
see it.
Did we?
We
didn't watch it.
We didn't know what I'm saying.
Where
the reception to Madam Web and everything. And this is following Morbius the year before. And we're about to have Kraven, which is also going to be awful again. It's like, maybe Sony sees it as a win because they're always in, they're in the zeitgeist of popular culture in terms of, like, everyone's aware of their garbage movies. No one goes to see them, but everyone's talking about them. Like, when Morbius came out, everyone was talking about Morbius. When Madam Web came out, everyone was talking about it. So even though it doesn't translate into ticket sales, maybe Sony's like, yeah, see, this is good. We're doing a great job right now. Maybe Sony's retarded enough to believe.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's like you grow up, you're like, can I actually write a movie or get into Hollywood? Yes, you can. No matter how bad you are, you can get in there.
Yeah, because the track record of the Madam Web people. Oh, that's something we can also talk about was Chris Stuckman kissing the boots of Hollywood so much that he won't say anything bad about Madam Web.
What? Are you talking about the YouTube reviewer?
Yeah, you didn't see that?
It was a
controversy because he made a video. And he's like, Madam Web review. And all he said it was like, I'm not going to talk about Madam Web because studios are the problem, and I don't want to say anything bad about something that someone else creates because they work really hard on it. It's like, okay, dude. It's because he's trying to make it as a director right now, so he doesn't want
to become a director?
Yeah, he doesn't want to piss off anyone that he potentially could work with. But, spoiler alert, Chris, I don't think he's going to work with anyone, but give it your best shot. I don't think saying essentially, I feel like this is shitting on it harder than anything you could have possibly said.
Imagine,
saying,
like,
it's so bad you're treating it like a child, where you're like, I can't say anything about it. I've got to, like...
Imagine if you weren't allowed to criticize an NFL player because They work really hard. Yeah, they work really hard. That's not the point of it. Like, yeah. If something is bad or that you do something bad, you criticize it. It's what people do.
But no, so, Ian, creatives have never made anything bad. It's always studios that do everything bad. There's no chance that a creative could have made anything bad because they tried really hard. And even if they did really bad, their heart was in the right place. It's like, it doesn't matter, dude. It doesn't matter if their heart was in the right place or anything that. If you make something bad, it's bad and people should tell you it's bad and that's how you get better.
How's the end product come out?
Yeah, take off the kid gloves. That was funny hearing him. Like, he got lambasted for that, though. Like, his comments, everyone was like, this is retarded. Like, even his fans came out and were like, dude, you are a dumbass for this.
He, like, obviously he has a nice fan base, but I always thought his reviews were kind of boring. But
oh, yeah, incredibly boring. But, you know, to each their own. But that was funny. But yeah, I'd be so down for Spider-Man 4. I think that's something you could do. You could do the years later, and you could do like a lot of really cool things. I think if you actually give Sam Raimi the reins, you give him a competent writer to work with, I think you could do something really cool, and I'd be excited for it. Because, you know, everything came out with Spider-Man 3, speaking of studio interference, that Spider-Man 3 was not a movie Raimi wanted to make. Like, he wanted to do something completely different, but the studio said, you need Venom. We want Venom.
But There's always two sides, because you could see clearly with Zack Snyder that he needs studio interference. Like, there are times where the studio makes good choices.
No, not necessarily studio interference, but he needs someone there. Like, he needs someone to hold him in check. Like, in the case of Man of Steel, it was Nolan. Nolan was there to keep him in check for the first one, and then he seemed more hands-off on
Batman. My point is, like, interference is not always a bad thing. Like, I think that's a really easy thing for directors to blame when something goes wrong, is to point to that. And some of the times, I'm sure it's true. But I'm sure other times the studio makes decent choices, because, again, they're the ones investing this money into Madame Web for it to flop horribly.
Sometimes, yes, but they were also the ones that thought it was good to hire these retards. Obviously, there's both cases. I think more often than not, it is the studio's fault on a lot of, like, dumb decisions. But that being said, you shouldn't be free from...
It shouldn't be a get-out-of-jail-free card.
Yeah. And also, it happens the other way as well. Like, there is sometimes where there probably is sometimes where a director or writer, like, wants to do something really dumb, and someone at the studio is like, no. There's probably some of that as well. But I do think it's more lopsided towards the other side, because you hear stuff all the time about, like, a studio, like, mandating certain things that are so dumb. But Spider-Man 3, I mean, was a case where it's well documented. We know about all this stuff where they wanted to, like, do a lot of things, Venom being one of the big ones, where they're just like, he's so popular, we got to put him in there. And Sam Raimi didn't want Venom. He had no plans for Venom. And you could tell with how poorly Venom was handled in the movie, among other things. But yeah, I'd be down for Spider-Man 4. I think it'd be cool. I hope we get it. It's something that could definitely happen. And especially now that Sam Raimi's, you know, did Doctor Strange 2, he's got connections with Marvel again. And yeah, and Sony's trying to, you know, the only problem is Sony would be like, hey, you should put Madame Web and Kraven and Morbius. Yeah. You know, as long as they just leave him be, you could do a cool Spider-Man 4.
I mean, you can't do worse than Madame Web and Morbius, right? And Kraven, like, there's no way.
Yeah. But, alas, there's not really much else to talk about here. So I think we'll talk about Dune, and then we'll move into Shogun afterwards. So we just saw Dune. I rewatched the first Dune the night before to get a refresher, because I hadn't seen it since it came out in theaters in, what, 2021, I think? That was the last time I saw it. I saw it once in theaters, never saw it again until the other night when I rewatched it. And we watched Dune 2 last night, and I, just with every single Denis Villeneuve movie, I assume I pronounced his name right, every time a new one of his movies comes out, it's the greatest movie of all time. It's a cinematic masterpiece. You have to go see it. And then I go see it, and I'm like, I enjoyed it. Don't know if I really cared to go see it again, other than Sicario. Sicario is the only movie of his that, like, I really think is great. But yeah, I saw Dune 2, and I'm like, it's good. I didn't love it. I didn't think it was the best thing ever. I don't have an urge to, like, rewatch it again. Like, it was good. I felt the exact same, basically, as I thought about the first one, where I'm like, it's good. It's very pretty. It's very competently made. The performances are great. The music's really good. It's very cinematic. But, like, I just don't find it incredibly compelling or interesting, or yeah, it's just like, it's good enough. It's like a 7 out of 10 movie. That's how I feel about both Dunes.
Yeah, I'll say the same thing. I've seen the first Dune once, never really cared to see it again. I think it's a good movie, but to me it was kind of boring. And this movie kind of the same thing. I was disappointed because the reviews coming out of this movie was, this is, I can't believe this movie is getting made. It's a sci-fi movie. And I was like, it's a good movie, but I don't know. It's a lot of more of the same with the first Dune. I will say, I don't feel like you, like, I heard there's a lot more action in this movie. I don't feel like you get that much more action, maybe because it's definitely 3 hours. And so it's spread out so much, but I'll say this. I am totally with Anakin. I hate sand. You are on this planet for 3 hours, and there's a point in this movie where two characters are staring out talking about how beautiful these sand dunes are, and I was like, just kill me. Like, I do not, I am so sick of seeing sand. I am so sick of this.
I did not
I'll say
this,
like,
point.
The cinematography is good. I don't think it's any better than the first movie. Like, I think it's just as good as the first movie. So in that aspect, I won't say it was bad or I was disappointing. I just thought, I thought like, hearing about how great it was going to be, I thought, like, you know,
I thought the first movie looked really good, and I thought this one looked really good.
I do, too, but what I'm saying is I didn't think Dune 2 looked any better than Dune 1. Like, I think they were on par with each other when it comes to that.
I agree, but I think the first one looked, like, amazing. So I don't think it's, like, there wasn't a whole lot
of I remember, I liked the way the first one looked better than this one. There's, like, two sequences in this movie that I really liked. Besides that, it's good, but there's just a... I don't even know how to say it. Stuff happens that I just wasn't really into. That's what I was saying.
I didn't find it very compelling. That's
yeah,
what I was saying. Like, I didn't
stuff
really
happens,
care
and I'm
to
just
see
like,
it keep going.
Also, this rule, it kind of breaks the rules they made in the first movie, which really annoyed me.
Yeah, there are some things that don't really make a whole lot of sense.
And then
which we'll get into more once we get into spoilers.
I'm trying to think. Yeah, the performances are all good. I don't think there's anyone that did bad. I think everyone did pretty good.
So there is one thing I want to say though. I think the cast is great, except I think casting Christopher Walken as the Emperor was a bad choice.
Yeah, he's Christopher Walken.
Christopher Walken cannot disappear into a role. Walken in a dress going, Paul, you're the last of the Atreides. Dude, that's not the Emperor. It's Christopher Walken.
How funny would it be if they got Ian McDermott to be the Emperor? Just like, that would have been a better casting.
He's so old now. He does like the old person shakes and everything while he's just sitting there. And it's like, Christopher Walken's legend, great actor. He can't be a character. He can only be Christopher Walken.
I thought Austin Butler did really good as whatever his name is. He's not in the movie enough.
Yeah,
he's
in the movie for like 15 minutes,
and he's in it for like 15 minutes. Like you when you first see him, you're like, okay, this guy's kind of crazy, and then you don't see him for like another hour, and then you see him for like 5 minutes, and then you don't see him for another 40 minutes, and then it's the end.
Yeah. He got a lot of crap for constantly talking like Elvis after the movie was over, but this his voice sounds just like Skarsgård. He did such a good job. He killed it. Like he was my favorite part.
He was probably my favorite part. I thought Javier Bardem did really good as Stilgard. Yeah. Timothée Chalamet did good as Paul Atreides. Zendaya does good as what's her name? Chani. Rebecca Ferguson is good as the mom.
Everyone's great. I did going into the movie. I was looking forward to see more Brolin because I liked him a lot in the first movie. But he doesn't. He doesn't get to do anything in this movie, really.
Yeah, he does. He gets one thing he gets to do.
Yeah, but he kind of just shows up, and he's kind of there for like a plot point, and that's like, it's like, I would have liked to see.
So it's like, I'm not really I'm not really invested into what is going to happen. I guess like I'm watching Paul go through all this stuff, and I'm just kind of like, okay.
Yeah, I just don't really care about the prophecy, and like a big thing is I don't find the Fremen interesting. Like, cause the whole thing, like, if you're not hooked into the Fremen,
you've seen the Fremen so many times.
I just don't find them interesting. Like their whole thing, like I just like they're desert people and like this is their way and blah blah. It's like I just don't really care. The
way that they're portrayed as like the underdog natives of the land, you know, living off the land. You've seen that in Avatar. You've seen that in so many different type of movies that like their story point to me, like you're saying, it's not very compelling. Like they try and make them more interesting with like the society and how some of them have believers versus fundamentalists. Their culture is not very interesting to me. They need water to survive on a desert planet. And they ride worms.
Yeah. Also, Rebecca Ferguson gets like sidelined in this one. She was,
She gets her own quest.
And Chalamet were like the main characters of the first one, like neck and neck for who's the main character. And this one, she kind of got sidelined. Like, she's in it for like the first like 30 minutes, and then she disappears for a while and like just seldom shows up for like a couple minutes at a time.
Yeah, there's definitely. I mean, the focus by far on Paul Atreides. He's by far, it's him and Zendaya's movie. Like those two, yeah. And I guess Javier Bardem carves into a little bit, but those, I mean, they take up like at least two hours of screen time. I don't know. I just wasn't. These movies just didn't hook me in. Like it's not a bad movie. It's a good movie. It's well made, very well acted, shot very well. But I just like, okay, like I have more problems I can talk about in spoilers that I won't mention here. But I just wasn't, like Dylan said, I wasn't invested into their stories really that much.
Yeah, it's just.
It's like, okay, we're going to do that. Okay. We're going to do that. Okay. We're going to do that. Okay. Okay. We're here. You don't really get many action scenes in this movie. You get a lot of like lead up to them and then afterwards, but you don't get a lot of them in between. So.
Well, I mean, I didn't have like a huge problem with that. My thing was like, in the first one, there's not a whole lot of action, but when that whole siege happens, when they take down the House of Atreides, it's done so well.
Yes,
like, that
but
part
you
is
that,
awesome in the first movie. That, in this, there's nothing that equivalent in this.
No, there's not.
Well.
There's nothing. There's not, and there should be. There should be something that they will talk about later that doesn't get to that level. And that's why. Yeah. That's why I was waiting. Like they build up for 2.5 hours to that point, and then you get there, and we'll tell you what happens later. But, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, so I guess we both felt the same. Where it's like it's good if you're looking for if you're starved of movies right now because there's nothing. This is the third movie I've seen this year. I've seen The Beekeeper, which I enjoyed. It's a good, like, freaking 90s action movie, essentially. I saw Argyle, which sucked ass.
Terrible.
That was
terrible.
And then now I've seen this. Those are the only
this
three.
Movie is,
we're in
this is
March, and I've only seen three movies in theaters.
I will
year.
Say this is the best movie of the year so far because the movies I've seen, yeah, it's been awful. So
yeah, I'd say, like, a little bit better than The Beekeeper, which is hilarious to say. The Beekeeper, like this just schlocky
did you like,
of,
did you
like dumb action movie I have neck and neck with.
Did you like
the cinematic either, masterpiece Dune 2?
Did you like either Dune better than 2049?
Blade Runner 2049?
Yeah.
Blade Runner 2049, I saw that one time in theaters and I just remember that being like the perfect nap movie.
Yeah, I mean
that's kinda, like you just kinda
this,
like,
I could take a nap in Dune 2. I could take a nap.
I would have to rewatch 2049 because I felt like 2049 was one of those where it's like it's very pretty, the sound is really cool, and I like the performances just like with this movie, but like I wasn't real intrigued. But also, I wasn't a big fan of the original Blade Runner. The original Blade Runner I thought was aight, and I found kind of boring.
Yeah, I think I like Dune better than Blade Runner. I think it's best movie Sicario. I definitely like him better than Arrival. I did not like Arrival.
I liked Arrival. I just thought the ending was really retarded.
Yeah, that ruined it for me.
Because I liked Arrival. Arrival is another one of those movies where everyone says it's the greatest movie of all time.
The ending of that movie made me
like,
so mad.
I was locked in, and the ending, I'm like, oh,
if you
dumb.
if you do that bad with an ending, I have problems. But yeah, so I give like a 7 out of 10, maybe 7.5.
I would say I like the first one a teensy bit more than this one.
I think from what I remember the first one, I'll probably never watch it again. I liked it better than this one.
Well, the first one also had a big difference, which was Duncan Idaho. Duncan Idaho
yes.
rules.
He sorely missed this movie.
The best. Not having Momoa in here is like...
That might be another problem is like the Fremen are all basically the same. I mean, they all have their characteristics, but they all have like, they're all like, and then the Harmonins or the Harkonnens, whatever they're called,
yeah.
They're all the same too. So you don't really get like another perspective the whole movie, or like a wrench into a. You don't get another like how Duncan Idaho was, where he's just like a completely different personality. So, yeah, I don't know. It's a good movie, but
I mean, you got
I'm not
Brolin
selling it
for
very well.
The 15 seconds he is in the movie.
Yeah, for all yeah.
But yeah, I guess okay. So now we're gonna jump into spoilers for Dune. If you don't want spoilers, but you want to hear us talk about Shogun, I'll hopefully have timestamps in the description so you can look at that and skip ahead. So spoiler alert: we're gonna talk about Dune Part 2 spoilers. Woo-hoo. All right. First things first. Maybe I missed something. What the hell happened to the shields? In
yes,
the first
because...
movie, it was a big part of it. It made sense. It was cool. I liked it how they're like, hey, we've gone back to hand-to-hand combat because we have these shields that talk. stop anything fast coming in. So bullets and all that stuff's like useless. It's like, oh, that's cool. So now you got to, you know, do this new form of combat, like hand to hand. You got to go slow when you go to land the kill. Sick. And this, there's like one scene where someone has a shield and that's it.
The very first scene is snipers shooting people.
And then they tell him, he says, like, don't put your shield on. I was like, what? Why is he not putting his shield on? What's wrong with the shield? I didn't understand.
And there's another scene I didn't even think about, Dylan, when they're shooting him from the helicopter. They don't have any shields on. There are so many times in this movie, this is what my biggest issue, like Dylan said, if they would have stuck to the rules of the first movie, it would have been fine. They don't. Guns work in this movie. You can kill people with them. It happens with the helicopter-looking thing on the big sandcrawler, and it happens in the first shot of the movie. So it makes no sense for all these whales.
I feel like there's something we missed. There's got to be something. There's no way everyone that worked on this movie was so dumb that no one's like, hey, what happened to the shields in the first movie? There's no way. With the movie this complicated, there's no way. There has to be some piece of lore we missed or something where it's like, hey, if you use a shield in the sand, the worm will eat you or something. I don't know. There's got to be something. Because there's no way.
Why weren't the guys why weren't the Harganins on top of that rock using shields?
They got sniped. I know. That's what. But remember, the guy said shield. Then he says, no, don't turn on your shield. And they all get sniped. So there's got to be something. Why was he telling them, don't turn on your shield?
I don't understand. That doesn't make any sense. Even the Harganins in the desert were getting shot up by the helicopter. Their shields didn't work. Like, the fact that no one else, like, there's so many grounds.
Their shield did work in the helicopter. Remember,
No, I'm talking about the people on the ground. Remember, they were getting shot up and getting killed. There was ones of them getting killed on the ground by the gun. They didn't have shields. Like, it doesn't make any sense for those ground soldiers not to have guns that were defending that thing.
Yeah, no one had shields ever other than, like, that one time in the arena where we see him turn his shield on, then he turns it off. And it was such a big part of the first movie. I don't know why they just disappeared. Again, I feel like there has to be something we missed or something that I don't know, because it didn't make any sense. I don't understand. Because in the first movie, the only time they ever mentioned anything like that, I remember Paul's like, why aren't the giant spice things, the ones that like extract the spice, why aren't they shield? They're like, oh, if we use that, like angers the worms or something. It's like, okay, but those are giant shields. Those aren't like personal shields. So I don't think that would anger the worms, right? So it's like, I don't know. Also, we saw everyone use shields in the first movie. So, like you said,
you had to go slow to get in there. People are getting killed with swords left and right fast, not slow. So that breaks it too. It makes no sense. So the fact that they don't have guns in here, it's like they just wanted to keep the hand in hand.
When they wanted to. It's like, but yeah, why wouldn't anyone just have a sidearm just in case?
Yeah.
And you just see really... because it doesn't waste anything if they do have a shield. If it's just like, you find out, then it's like, okay, they do have a shield.
Another really dumb part of the movie is when, first of all, Dave Bautista's character gets sidelined hard, and they make him like a total loser.
I feel like that has to be something in the books. He's just a big old bitch in this movie. Because in the first movie, he doesn't do anything, and I was like, maybe he'll do something in this movie. He doesn't do anything. You think him and Josh Brolin are going to have a sick fight, and Brolin just kills him in half a second. It's like,
Yeah, but like he gets mad, but like, anywho, so he gets demoted because he can't kill the Fremen, and Austin Butler comes along and does
this makes no sense.
And no one, they go to their home tree, right? It's their home tree. It's whatever you want to call
rock.
It. It's their home rock. And they just artillery shell the crap out of it.
But the best part of that is right after that, the Baron goes, genius! Military genius!
It's like,
no one thought, how do we take out the Fremen? I don't know, kill them?
Or destroy their home?
No one thought of that.
Dumbest thing. You've been fighting these for 80 years, and you didn't think to go shell their one place because they have to live in the South?
It took Austin Butler's character to be like, hey, why don't we just shoot their home? You know, they can't live actually in the desert. They live in the rocks. It's like, why don't we do that? Because Batista went and fired like two rockets and then went into the dust and got his entire team murdered. Austin Butler's like, no, instead of that, why don't we just fire all of our artillery at it?
The funniest thing then is the Fremen are all upset and they're mad. And they're like, this isn't right. They don't fight fair. They didn't send in grunt soldiers. They don't fight fair. And I'm like, y'all literally hide in the sand and sneak attack and surprise attack, shoot people from far away with your Spartan laser. That's not fighting fair. That's not lying up.
Yeah, and that's something I want to talk about as far from the first movie I rewatched it, and I had the same thought when I first saw it, but I don't remember if we talked about it on the podcast or anything when we first saw it. But something that was like hilarious that didn't really make a whole lot of sense is Duncan Idaho is shown to be like the best fighter. Him and Josh Brolin are two of the best in the universe, and Duncan Idaho like destroys dudes, like so much so that like when that whole siege happens and he leaves, he takes out like five guys, and there's an additional like five guys surrounding a helicopter. They all run and let him take the copter because they don't want to die because he's so like sick. Well, he had like infiltrated the Fremen and become a part of them, but when he did that, they had sent someone to kill him. And he talked about how it was like the Fremen were the best fighters I've ever seen. The one guy that was the closest I've ever come to death. But then we just see them get their ass kicked, and the only time they're good is when they're sneaking up on people. It's like, how did any of them ever pose a threat to Duncan Idaho? I don't understand. The only thing they're good at is sneaking up on people. When it's like fair fights, they suck. Like Rebecca Ferguson and Timothée Chalamet, they beat the it was like 2 versus 20, and they beat the shit out of all of them at the end of the first movie. And then when it's a one-on-one, one of their best fighters, Jameis Winston, gets destroyed in the 1v1 by freaking Paul. Like, no, not even close to a fight. It's like, I thought these guys were, like, the best fighters. They suck. The Fremen are only good at sneaking up on people.
That's the other funny thing. So Paul infiltrates them to become their, like, savior or whatever. And he does all this, and that's still not enough to go take, what is it, Arrakis or whatever the capital city is. What do they need? They need atomic bombs that his family had. So no matter all that training, he didn't need it. He just needed atomic bombs and he could have gone to the Capitol.
Yeah, he did need it because everything else in the entire movie that always happens, he needs his training.
Yes, but he needs his army. But what I'm saying is, like, that even if he had that, it wouldn't have worked without the atomic bombs. Like, he has to have those things.
He wouldn't have gotten to his atomic bombs without everything else he has. So your point is moot there.
No, it was just funny. He does all this and it's like, oh yeah, we still need, you know, your forgotten self, because he's become useful in he's become the Moadib or whatever in the Fremen. The coolest scene in the movie, I think, is when he rides the sandworm.
Yes, that scene is sick. When he rides the sandworm, it's awesome. We saw it in Dolby, and the sound is amazing. That
literally
that
shakes
was,
your seat.
It
literally
that
shakes,
was my favorite scene. It was sick. It was such a cool scene. They didn't show how he got off the sandworm, though.
No, and they don't show how anybody gets off the sandworm.
It kind of poses a problem, because later they see, when they go south, they have, like, the elderly and children on the sandworms, right? It's like, how do any of those people get off the sandworm? First of all, how they get on, because we see the getting on a sandworm's tough, and it's not easy. But nevertheless, how the hell do you get off? How do you get off of a sandworm? That's
yeah,
got to be so hard.
You know, it's just easy stuff. And the other cool scene, all right, so my biggest issue with the film, besides the no guns, which has felt convenient AF, my biggest issue
not the no guns, is the fact that you had a reason for no guns in the first movie, then abandoned it in the second movie for no reason.
Yes, but So the whole movie, there's skirmishes, right? But there's no real big battle. Like, you don't have any real big battle. Right?
You do at the end, but they don't really...
That's what I'm getting to. But you know. I'm saying up to that point, there's no, like, big battle, right? You're like, the whole plan is to get to the end, right? And so they get the Emperor to come there because Paul Atreides is still there. And he comes to the capital city, and they're like, okay, we're gonna siege the capital and get to the Emperor. I'm gonna kill him. And so they make this plan up, and they go and do it. And it happens, and you see about 3 seconds of it. Like, you see the atomic nukes go off, and then you don't really see much of the fighting. Like, at all. You see...
You get, like, that one scene of Zendaya where she does exactly what we saw Paul do in the first movie in his, like, vision.
She does that, and then
Batista dying in 5 seconds.
You get Josh Brolin for 5 seconds, and then you get to the Capitol where they had this line of sword, like, guards go out of the Emperor, and they get taken out off screen, and then...
Yeah, those idiots who went into the dust cloud instead of just sitting back,
Yeah. And then, Paul Atreides
you know
comes...
That felt like? All of that felt like cutting corners. When Josh Brolin's fighting people, it's zoomed in on his face and he's just swinging his arms. You don't get any actual, like, choreography and fighting. And then he takes out Batista in, like, 2 moves. And then those guys, the Emperor's guys that are supposed to be super badass, they walk into a cloud and you don't see them again. They're just all dead. It felt like cutting corners. It felt like, it's hard work to actually choreograph and film a fight scene. Let's just skip all of this. We gave you a 5 second Zendaya fight that was, you know, that was, we got that, right?
And yeah, and so
that was the only thing that actually felt like they put any effort into it.
And then you get the final fight with Paul versus.
Which is really good, by the way.
Which is really good.
Part of the movie.
And that's it. You don't really see the siege of the Capitol. It takes like 3 seconds.
But then I was also kind of sad because I was like, my favorite part of the movie is dead now.
I thought it was going to be like that scene where the House of Atreides gets. You know, ransacked like in the first movie. It's not.
Yeah.
It's not close to that.
But
and so I was very disappointed with that.
And talking about some of the good stuff again, though, that which is also kind of leans into what makes the movie not as enjoyable for me is like when we switched to Austin Butler's character in the Harkonnens, I found that immensely more interesting than the Fremen. when we got there and like their world, like when they were in that arena, it was all black and white. And you're learning. You're like, hey, yeah, there's these slaves that are drugged up that he then fights, and it's all for show. And but now this one's not, so he gets a legit fight, and it's like, is the Baron actually giving him a gift for his birthday so he gets a real fight and he likes that, or is he trying to get him killed because this is his successor that could, you know, do some things politics? And it's like, oh, this is so much more interesting than all the stuff with the Fremen. Like, this is so much more interesting. But we got like 10-15 minutes of that. Seeing him in the back preparing, how he has like his concubines or whatever that he feeds like actual like humans, and it's like, it's really weird and interesting. And I was like, I like the Harkonnen stuff's interesting. Like, I like this way more than the Fremen stuff. And then we go to the Fremen, and it's like, here's a worm that we're gonna get some blue juice out of. It's like, okay. I mean, I would prefer like more of this movie to be about the Harkonnens than the Fremen. The Fremen are just...
The Fremen were just kind of, I think it's because I've seen stuff like them so much before that I just don't really care. I was like, okay.
The Fremen, it's
whatever.
I just didn't find the Fremen particularly interesting. Like Harkonnens, I was like, okay, this is really
Josh interesting. Brolin's literally in the movie for like 10 minutes at most. Like, you meet him and then he just doesn't really do much.
I was scared when they were showing the slaves going into the arena. I was like, oh no, please don't be Brolin. I don't want Brolin to get killed. Please, no. And then it wasn't Brolin. I was like, yeah. And then Brolin shows up. And I was like, please, Brolin, kill some Fremen before you run into Paul. Then Paul just trips him instantly. I was like, damn it! I wanted to see him kill some Fremen. I wanted to see him destroy some Fremen.
I like the part when Paul Atreides offered his hand in marriage to the Emperor's daughter in front of freaking...
Yeah,
that was great.
Yeah,
that was like...
Right then he's like, I will love you for as long as I live. And then he's like, check this now. Now watch this drive. And he's like, hey, I'll take your hand in marriage.
Because she doesn't understand the political game that he understands. Like, she just knows the Fremen
stuff. She understands that she just doesn't care. You know? I did like how when he offers to fight the Emperor's champion... how Josh Bowen's like, let me do it. Because Josh Bowen's like, I will kill this guy in 2 minutes,
yeah,
just like I did Batista. He's like, just let me do it, dude. Just save us all the heartache. I will kill him so fast. Chalamet's like, and Paul's like, no, I will do it. And then we get a really good fight. Like, that part's really cool, and it's really well done. That and the worm are my two favorite parts of the movie. And I thought
there's
really
a lot
well
that kind of happened in this movie that I just don't care about. It's just like, it happens.
Yeah.
I'm watching it.
It's a shame that we're not going to get more Austin Butler because he was really good in this movie. Like, I thought he was the best part of the movie.
Do you find the actual world of Dune interesting? Like, the planet?
I mean, it's just a big desert.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, I did not care. Tatooine, my desert planet, the goat.
Like, it's, you know, desert's just a desert. It's fine.
The one part where they're talking about how beautiful. There is a part where Paul Atreides
the
is like.
The dunes are really cool looking.
There's one part where Paul Atreides is like, my allegiance is to. And all I could think about was, my allegiance is to the Republic, to democracy!
Yeah.
They should have rewrote that line because as soon as. And you know, every millennial is going to hear that and just immediately think of Obi-Wan. Yeah. You can definitely see parallels between him and Anakin and their kind of story because they're both like chosen ones and stuff.
Yeah. I did like when Paul put the Bene Gesserit chick in her place, whatever mother.
Silence!
I love that. And she's like, oh! She was so, like, pearl-clutching when that happened. Like, yes! I hate them so much. They annoy me so much. I like Jessica, but the rest of them annoy the crap out of me.
You also got the reveal that both Rebecca Ferguson and Paul Atreides are
Harkonnens. Because the Baron is her dad, turns out.
Yeah.
So her dad, and he just went and killed him right in front of him.
Yeah, so, he went and said goodbye, grandfather, and just freaking, as he was crawling towards the throne.
He said goodbye, grandfather? I couldn't understand what he said there. Like, the way the sound was.
He said goodbye,
like,
grandfather.
It was very hard to understand, at least for me, it was very hard to understand him there.
Oh.
So, but yeah, he like slowly stabbed him through the neck. So he got his revenge for his father, because I did like that, how, Josh Brolin was all in on, like, we gotta avenge your dad, dude. Like, that's what we're here for. Like,
yeah, Josh Brolin's like, why don't you do this? Like, why don't you just do the prophecy? And he doesn't want to do the prophecy because he's like, if I do this, millions of people are gonna die.
Well, I did also like that part where Paul's talking to his mom, and his mom's like, but your father didn't believe in revenge. He's like, well, I do.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, good. It's like, you can't let him just do that, like... do their deal and murder your father and like destroy your entire house and everything, and then just
it was
like, oh well.
It was still so dumb, though, that the Harganans didn't just freaking artillery shell the crap out of Homarok for 80-something years.
Yeah. Well, no. I agree. It doesn't make any sense at all. Like, that is so funny, the fact that he does that, and then it cuts to the Baron, and he goes, genius! And it's like,
yeah, like,
no one thought, maybe we should just go explode where they live? Like,
yeah.
It took Austin Butler's character to be like, yeah, we should do this. Oh my goodness, dude. That was funny. I think we covered most of it. Is there anything else you want us to talk about with Dune before we move on to Shogun?
Nope.
All right. So, Shogun, before we talk about we're going to talk about Shogun. Before we talk about like anything, the main actor came out this week, said he had certain conditions before signing on to Shogun to ensure Japanese culture was accurately depicted. He said, I needed things, including if you don't hire Japanese actors for Japanese role, I cannot be involved in this project, which is great. And I am very happy about that. Everyone's patting him on the back. But if this were about different culture and different things, and you were like, I want this to be all these certain types of people, you might get some backlash, and people might not be happy about it. That's the only thing I want. I want people to be consistent with that. You know, that's just what I thought was funny with that. I was like, I agree, that's great. They should be hiring Japanese people for this, but like, you'll do other things, and you'll be in a certain era, and there'll be someone that should not be there, and everyone will be like, but we need them for the diversity of it. It's like, okay. So I just thought that was funny, but first two episodes of Shogun out, we watched them, it's great, we both really enjoyed it, it's really good. I don't think we can really talk about it without going into spoilers. You know, it's really hard to talk about a TV show, especially a TV show like this, without going into spoilers. So before we go into it, I just want to say we both would definitely recommend it. You should watch it. It's on FX/Hulu, so check it out if you have time. It's really well made. With that being said, I guess we'll get into spoilers. So spoiler alert, if you haven't seen Shogun, there's your warning. Ian, go ahead.
Yeah.
You really enjoyed this a lot.
I love Shogun. I thought I saw the trailers. I was like, you know, it's got 100% Rotten Tomatoes right now. I think 98%.
Doesn't mean much for TV shows, to be honest.
No, I think it's like 98 or 96% for audience score.
TV shows, Rotten Tomatoes is always just effed. It's really weird.
It also has like the highest IMDb score for a TV show right now. It's a miniseries, only gonna be 10 episodes. It is fantastic. Like, it draws you into the world of Canada. I mean, Japan. I say that because Japan looks a lot like British Columbia in this movie because they filmed it there. I'm the only reason I know that. I go to BC a decent bit. So it looks, I mean, the setting is great. The Japanese culture is cool. The only issue I have with the show
is it the Portuguese?
Yeah, so they speak two languages in the show. They speak English, or they speak Japanese, obviously, and they speak Portuguese. The problem is, for the viewer's point of view, so that we don't have to read subtitles the whole time, Portuguese is actually English. So, like, the first two episodes are like, we need a translator so we can speak Portuguese, and then they just start speaking English, and I'm like, what is going on? Yeah. Especially because one of the main characters is an Englishman, and you're like, why is he speaking Portuguese? Well, he does because he just does stuff. But no, the main characters are great. The political intrigue is great. It's about the death of the ruler of Japan and the shoguns trying to or not the shoguns, the other rulers trying to vie for power in the vacuum while his son becomes of age. And you're following this the main character is this one, I don't, what do you call him, like a head or a governor or whatever they call them. I don't remember what they call them.
They're like a council, essentially. There's like, I think there's five of them, including him, right? I think there's five?
Yes.
There's five. And they don't like the power that he's got, and they don't like that people like him, and that he could potentially, cause an uproar. And the fact that, like, the air and everything lives in like his part of town, so they don't really like that either. But and we get a lot of Protestant versus Catholic beef, which is really,
yes.
I love that they hate each other. It's so good, those dirty Catholics. It's so good. Like, they pull them up because the Japanese, as far as they're concerned, like every freaking white religious person is the exact same. So they pull over like a friar to freaking to translate for this Protestant, and the Protestant instantly rips the cross off the
off the friar's necklace and just stomps on it. He's like, I do not believe in this guy's religion. This guy's a piece of garbage. I hate him.
Yes,
do not let him translate for me. He's going to lie. And the Japanese guy's just looking like, huh? It's like, you white people think differently? And it's also funny because, like, in one thing, Japanese will be like, these are savages. And then on the other side, you have the white guy being like, hey, oh, we want a savage freaking Japanese. And they're both just, like, talking about how they're both savages, like, in their own languages to each other. And it's, like, it's great.
Yeah. But, yeah, you have, like, a lot of intrigue of, like, like this the one ruler, the main character you're following around, like, he knows his life's in jeopardy as soon as something happens, so he's trying to hold that off and position himself best as well. The Englishman is just trying not to die, like, he's trying to be able to trade with Japan and not die. And I mean it's just really
also
good. I mean, what else am I...
It's pretty funny as well at certain points when the freaking there's a part where a guy's washed up on shore and they have to go down a cliff to get him, and the Japanese guy, who's like a high-ranking Japanese guy, has to go do it so he doesn't look weak in front of his people and have the Englishman do it for him. So when he goes, he just completely Fs up and the rope breaks and he falls. And freaking the Englishman goes, like, I'm sorry, your piece of shit boss died. Or something along those lines. And it's hilarious. The dude's just, like, there bleeding, just, like, laid out on a rock, like, oh! And all of his men are like, oh, no!
The funniest part of this movie too is I mean, it does a really good job conveying how much, like, respect and honor is part of Japanese culture.
Oh yeah.
But they're like, dude, anytime a character messes up in this movie, they just want to commit seppuku or the show.
Like, you have a typo, you just start trying to kill yourself.
Yeah,
like,
you're like,
anything.
permission to commit seppuku. You're like, dude, you
like
just
an emo teenage girl in this in Japan. That's what I've learned. Like, the Japanese people are just emo teenage girls, dude. Anything
like
that,
if
happens,
you do,
like,
anything,
I'm gonna kill myself. My
like
life is
one
so
guy
hard.
One guy tells him he can't get up above this rock, so he falls out of the sword. He's gonna commit seppuku in the water.
Yeah, he's in the water. He hasn't even come close to dying yet. Like, he's in a tough sitch, like, no doubt about it. But he hasn't come close to dying yet. He instantly pulls out a sword. He's gonna kill himself.
There's also a brutal death in this show.
Well, we're in spoilers, so we can talk about the baby.
Boiled alive.
Oh, that I was talking about. Like, that's a brutal death. But I was talking about the baby, where they're literally just talking.
Oh, that
about,
one's
like,
terrible.
Nonchalantly talking about how they're gonna take this lady's baby and kill it because her fat ass husband was retarded. It's like, And that was another thing, like, the fat-ass retard did something, and then he's like, I will kill myself, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
It's like...
He stood up the honor of his leader, and then his leader was like, this guy wasn't dishonoring me. He's like, I even said to Dylan, he's gonna commit seppuku, and he was like, sir, permission to commit seppuku.
Dude, I hope every episode someone attempts suicide. Every episode someone needs to, like, just be like, I'm gonna kill myself. I hope. So far, we're, like, 2 for 2. Like, every episode someone's, like, trying to kill themselves. It's so funny. Just the slightest inconvenience. They're like, and they just, like, are about to kill themselves. It's so funny.
But
the baby
we're laughing
sad,
at
though. The baby
yes.
was really
It's
sad.
Hard to watch. Especially when they go tell the mother, like, we're doing it. She's like, no, you're not.
But you
they're
also,
like,
that was the scene you fell in love.
Oh, yeah, Bay shows up.
Can you explain her position, who she is, who are her children? Do you know anything about her? Because we were thoroughly confused about her character.
She is someone that is high ranking and can speak Portuguese, but I don't really know much else.
Yeah, so, okay. So something that's really
confusing. I'll say this too about this show. Besides the Englishman whose name is John, I don't really know anybody's names. Like,
name's Mariko. I know that because of Wolverine.
Mariko. Mariko's new bae.
Yeah, I know her name's Mariko legit because it's like, oh yeah, like the freaking character from X-Men. So I know Mariko. But yeah, what's really confusing is, like, I think an episode opens where it came back from commercial break and it opened with it being like a year earlier and it's showing, like, the former ruler of Japan when he's on his deathbed and, Mariko's there and she's got her what appears to be her son who's like 10 or whatever 10 12 years old, and he's talking to his dad who's, you know, the ruler, and then he's like, go to your mom, and he goes over to Mariko. It's like, okay, so that's her kid is like that 10 year old, and then there's like a Catholic priest there and he says something and she says, like, shove your religion up your ass, and it's like, okay, well, she hadn't converted yet, you know, this was a year ago. And then we fast forward to the future And she's got a different husband and a different son that's also like 12 years old, but it hasn't been 12 years since it's passed. It's been a year. But then also she's talking to the Englishman about how long she's been in a Catholic, and she says she's been Catholic for like 14 years. It's like, but she told that I'm so confused. Like, that's why we're all confused. Like, what is she about? We don't like we were very lost on her character. Granted, it is one of those things where in one ear, out the other when I read subtitles. I read the subtitles and I completely forget what I just read, like legit 2 seconds later. So it's on me probably as far as this goes. But yeah, I was lost on her.
Yeah, I'm a little confused on her character as well. But that being said, she still is a good character.
Yeah, she's cool.
She's cool. John Blackthorne is cool. Like, he goes through like the entire, like, he goes through an experience of these first two episodes.
Yeah.
From being shipwrecked to a prisoner to a guest to an actual prisoner waiting for death to getting broke out of, to getting broke out, to being brought before the Lord, to telling him about how the Catholics and the Protestants hate each other in this movie.
TV show.
This show.
At this point in real life, they really hated each other too. No.
And stuff, and he's called it an engine or a pilot, and he does a great. The acting's really good in this movie. The setting is really good, like the tone of it. You definitely get like
a movie like 20 times. It is.
I know.
A TV show.
You feel it's so good. It could be a movie. You feel the importance of it. You really feel what like the seriousness of it, and it's pretty cool. At least I really enjoy it so far.
Yeah. It's,
so I can't wait for it.
And
there's a really cool scene at the end of the second episode where they try and kill John Blackthorne, where the assassin comes in to kill him, and it's really well done.
Oh yeah, it's really cool. Like, that is sick. And also to say, to the point of how, like, how intriguing this is compared to like what we were talking about, dude, how intriguing this is and how captivated we are. It's been like 2 hours of talking, like for two episodes.
Yeah.
There hasn't been a whole lot of like action or like, oh, here's big like set pieces or anything. It's mainly just been a bunch of people talking, and it's very interesting because it's done so well. Like, it's they've done a really good job with it. Like, you are intrigued.
It's really cool to see how, like, when he comes in, how different he is as an Englishman, like with his culture and norms, how he does not understand it. Like, he's like, I'm not gonna die here. I don't want to be here. Like, I'm just trying to, you know, open up trade and do this stuff. And he has his own war he's trying to fight, and he's opening the Japanese eyes. Is like, yeah, there's more people than the Spanish.
Like, yeah, these dirty Catholics have they see you Japanese as nothing, and they see that they actually rule over you, and they have secret bases around. It's like, ooh,
yeah, with Ronin who are guarding them, and yeah, it's really well done. I cannot wait for the next episode. It's one of those things where if they had all 10 episodes out, I would have watched all 10 that night.
Yeah, yeah. And it's a really cool place. It's mainly talking about when violence happens, it is violent. Like, there's just a time where a dude just gets his head just chopped off, like, randomly. Like, they're just walking through, like, a village, and then, the head just drops. Like, oh, that happened. And then, like you said, like, you're just going through, and then all of a sudden, an assassin shows up and, like, just slits the neck of, like, 15 people. It's like, oh, snap. We just went to that. It's like, it's when the violence happens, it ramps up, and it's very violent. But, yeah, the show's been great. It's been really captivating so far, and I'm excited to see where it goes from here.
Yeah, I cannot wait for the next episode. I think it comes out on Monday or Tuesday. I am so ready to watch that show.
Yeah, it's been great. Anything else you want to say with Shogun? Any points that we missed?
Way better than the Halo show.
Anything's better than the Halo show. Halo was awful.
No, not True Detective. I quit that show.
I didn't watch
that
either.
Show.
See, so I didn't watch Halo or True. Well, you know, I watched the first season with you with Halo, but the second season I've seen clips, but I haven't really watched it.
This season of True Detective had interesting premise, and they just torpedoed that thing.
When I saw that the dude that like did the first season wasn't involved at all, I was like, yeah, I don't care to watch this season of True Detective.
They torpedoed it.
I've only seen seasons 1 and 3 of True Detective. Season 1 was great. I heard season 2 was bad. Didn't check it out. Season 3 we watched as it came out because it had Mahershala Ali in it. And I like him. And I watched it, and I was like, oh, it's pretty good. It wasn't as good as season 1, not even close, but it was still good. Like, season 3 is worth watching if you haven't seen True Detective. It's pretty good. And then this season, when I saw the trailer, I was like, that doesn't look too great, and the guy that's made it's not involved. And then all that stuff came out where he was just like, yeah, this show sucks. Like, the creator came out and was like, screw this. It's like, yeah,
You know, generally if the creator of something comes out and says this is dumb, you probably gonna be dumb. Just like with Avatar, where the creators of Avatar Last Airbender dropped out just a few months into like pre-production for the Netflix show. That's when I was like, I don't care about this live action remake anymore. Like when that happened, I was like, oh, I don't care. And now it just came out and all the clips I've seen, it looks awful.
You should watch it though if you like that show so much. Go watch it.
Yeah, I have the show on Blu-ray. I can watch it whenever I want. And I do. But yeah, no, I'm not gonna watch some. I'm not like you with Halo, where you'll just like, I'll watch this show about some random white guy going around in like a hoodie.
Jimmy Rings, baby, Jimmy Rings.
Yeah, you're the reason when they got season two because of people like you.
They started season two before season one even started. So no, it's not.
Yeah, and if it gets to season three, it's gonna be your fault as well. Your fault. I hope they try to make the Halo games more like the show, you know, so the games can be good for once. Yeah, I think that's basically it. So to summarize, Shogun's awesome. Definitely watch it. Dune is worth it if you're like having a dry spell with the theater, like most people. Go check out Dune. But I'd say temper your expectations. It's not a cinematic.
It's 3 hours too. It you feel it in that movie. You feel it.
I don't really have a problem with like long movies. I'm past that point where like that doesn't really matter for me.
Anything over 220 for me is getting rough.
I know, but for me, I don't. Dude, I saw Killer of the Flower Moon where like. Legit, the entire plot is revealed within like 15 minutes and nothing moves forward for the rest of the movie until like the very end. And that movie's like almost 4 hours long. And I was like, I just sat through it fine. Like, I was fine. I didn't get up to go to the bathroom or anything. So I can see basically anything as long as it's not awful. You know, long runtime doesn't bother me. But anyways, that's it. Thank you to everyone for listening. And we will see y'all later.
See ya.